You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. We really appreciate you guys listening week in and week out. It's because of you that we are now a 5-star rated podcast in the iTunes store. So if you haven't done so already, please head to iTunes, give us that rating review. We really appreciate it. We got a special interview episode of the Addicted to Fitness podcast for you today. And to tell you who we'll be interviewing, I will throw it over to my lovely co-host.
Thank you so much, sir. We're going to be speaking to someone today who I would call larger than life. He is... over 6.5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
He is a competitive bodybuilder, and he also has a pretty larger than life story behind him. So we're going to be speaking to Aaron Reed today.
Yeah, I learned about Aaron through a couple of my ETT clients. He, as you guys will hear in the interview, he has his own meal prep service, so they were subscribed to that. So once I heard about him and they told me a little bit more about him, I was like, that's somebody I really want to talk to on the podcast. Mainly, for multiple reasons, but honestly, when I was kind of conceptualizing the podcast, somebody I wanted to speak with was a competitive bodybuilder, because their approach to fitness and nutrition is very unique. And I'm super interested in that. So that's why I was glad we were able to speak with him.
Yeah, it's like night and day compared to what the average person thinks about, you know, nutrition and working out. It is so different. Never mind when you're a professional athlete, but when you're a competitive bodybuilder, that is a different world.
Mm-hmm. And it's even more unique for him since he is 6'7", you said, the world's tallest competitive bodybuilder now.
Ooh, I hope we find out how many calories he has to consume.
Well, we do talk a lot about nutrition in this. You guys will see. This is actually the longest interview we've had, so I want you guys to make sure stick through it. Yeah, stick with it. You know, it starts a little bit slow, but Aaron has a great story, and you guys will hear about it, and he is super passionate about nutrition, which you'll hear in the episode, all right?
Let's do it.
All right, without further ado, here's our interview with Aaron Reed. My guest today is a former WWE pro wrestler and 8-time National Physique Committee champion, the author of several health and nutrition books, including The Supernatural Lifestyle, which is basically the motivation behind his meal prep company. It's my distinct pleasure to welcome Aaron Reed to the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Thanks for joining me this evening, Aaron.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
Now, also another thing, when I was doing my research about for this interview, I heard that you're currently the world's tallest competitive bodybuilder.
Yeah, man. You know, it's not really a tall guy sport. You know, there's, like I was saying, there's, you know, if you're 6 feet tall, you're considered tall in bodybuilding, you know.
Now, what is it easier for smaller guys to put on mass, or is it just they look better, you know, with bigger muscles? What do you think it is?
It's the burning question, you know. I don't know. I think it's just a matter of opinion, because bodybuilding is subjective anyway.
Right.
So it's all a matter of opinion, you know. It's like you can walk me out, you know, in front of the public eye and have me hit some shots, you know, and put me next to a shorter guy, and, you know, the majority of the crowd's going to like the bigger guy.
Right.
It's just how it goes, no matter how muscular the shorter guy is. But when it comes to bodybuilding, what the judges are looking for, you know, typically they want that overdeveloped musculature in all the different areas. And so, you know, I feel like it's taken me a long time to get the size to compete with those guys. But, you know, people always said it was, like, impossible, and, you know, you know, you're too tall and whatever. And I just never listened to any of that shit. So, you know, so I just keep going. So, is it harder or not? I don't know. I only know my body, you know. But I do know it's been good, though, man. I've won so many times that it's like I'm right there. So I've never felt like, oh, I can't do bodybuilding, or, oh, it's just a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just kind of depends on, like, who you're talking to. It's like I just got done coming back from Chile in South America, and my sponsor sent me down there to guest pose for their national bodybuilding championship. So it was their 30-year event, and so they got me to guest pose, and that was like a huge honor for me. Like I was like, wow, because I'm not a pro bodybuilder at this point, you know, and for them to have me to come down there and, you know, put me over at that level is fantastic. I mean, I'm very close to turning pro, but I'm not there yet. So it's like, again, they're looking at me like, wow, this guy's so tall and he's big and all these things. They think it's great, you know? And so again, it's a matter of opinion, you know what I mean?
Right, and you kind of, we were talking before the interview, is that you've won different divisions within bodybuilding competitions and then the overall. So you've walked, I think you were telling me physique, and then like, what are some of the other divisions within the body?
So, you know, in the NPC right now, there's men's physique, there's classic physique, which is like the classic bodybuilding look. They put you in the little shorts. Mm-hmm. The men's physique has the long shorts.
Okay.
And it covers the legs. And then the classic physique, it has the smaller shorts, shows the legs. And then there's bodybuilding that puts you in the bikini. It's just bodybuilding. I've done all three divisions. I started doing bodybuilding initially in 2001. I was Mr. Teen Colorado bodybuilding champion back in the day. And then I competed with the men that day, took third as a heavyweight in the novice class. And I thought, okay, yeah, I might be tall, but apparently I got something, you know, I got enough to beat out these other guys, you know what I mean, coming out my first show. So I was stuck with bodybuilding, but then over time, you know, I thought maybe these other divisions might be a better fit for me, you know, because ultimately, you know, I always wanted to turn pro and, you know, base my entire life and career on my fitness. And by turning pro makes a lot of the things, makes a lot of things easier. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying they roll out the red carpet before you turn pro and, like, you know, they throw some big parade and your life is good after that. But like, it does make it easier. It's just, you know, to be pro when you try to market yourself. So like doing the men's physique class, like I did three shows, one overall at the Metropolitan, and I took 10th at USA's. But the year before that was the first time I competed in Florida. And it was 2010, and that was the basis for me proving that the principles in my book are the real deal. So, you know, I competed, you know, as my own coach, doing my own thing. In 2010, I was like 242 pounds. So I wasn't very heavy, but my posing was on point, my conditioning was on point, and I won the overall at the Mr. Gainesville show in 2010. A week later, I did the Florida State, and I won my division there as a super heavyweight. And then I went to junior USA's, and I took 9th. And so that's a good spot to be. But then, like I said, the next year I did men's physique, and I ended up, you know, winning overall, and then taking 10th at USA's. And I was like, I don't like this anyways. Can't see my legs, and I can't pose. And it's kind of like a model class. It's really what they should call it. They should call men's physique men's model class. Because, like, you don't need to train your legs. It's all about your abs and your hair and your look and, like, you know, your physique from the waist up, which to me is kind of crazy that that's a popular thing. But, you know, that then, you know, there's, you know, the classic bodybuilding that started this year. They call it classic physique. And they started it because they feel like there's a lot of guys that are great bodybuilders that look like guys from the golden era. You know, guys that have a little waist, great posing, you know, they look athletic. They're not just mass monsters where you're like, oh my God, you belong in a circus. These are guys that other people aspire to look like, you know. And so they started this division. I thought it was perfect for me. But one of the hurdles I had, again, was being so tall. I didn't really have anybody to compete against that was tall like me. And so I ended up just kind of looking like a really big bodybuilder,
right,
with smaller dudes. They, you know, made a comment to me that they said, you know, Aaron, when I look at your legs, one of the judges said, when I look at your legs, like, you look like a bodybuilder. Like, you have the legs of a bodybuilder. Like, I don't think classic. Like, I think you're just a big guy and you should just go back to bodybuilding. And so, you know, I took that as a huge compliment because I'm so tall, and like, you never look at the tall guy and think, oh, he has great legs. Like, you know, they're always like, it's never the case. So, you know, all that being said, you know, I think I'm the only competitor right now with an overall title in all three divisions, you know, because I did nationals this year and I won the, you know, the All South, which was fantastic. That was a lot of fun.
So you're still searching for kind of the division that fits you particularly?
I mean, I feel like I have been until now. I'm dead set on bodybuilding, you know, because now I'm planning on competing close to 300 pounds next year, And I don't give a shit who you line me up against. If I come out 300 pounds shredded, like, you better look phenomenal if you're going to be 50, 60, 70 pounds lighter than me and think you're going to beat me.
Yeah. Now, and it's amazing to hear, like, especially because I'm so kind of interested in bodybuilding because I know kind of the dedication. Well, unfortunately, I don't personally know, but I've paid attention to it for so long, whether it's watching documentaries like Pumping Iron. I mean, we're sitting in here in your apartment. We're looking at Arnold, a big picture of Arnold right now, and all the statues, most of them are of Arnold. Yeah. So the Pumping Iron documentary is something that is super interesting to me. And I want to know how you developed your love for bodybuilding. Did it start, you know, when you were younger, or did it develop into something, or was there some sort of event that made you pursue bodybuilding?
Well, there's probably a couple things, factors that go into it. First of all, in my family, everybody's big in my family, all athletes. My dad's 6'5", uncle's 6'5", my grandpa's 6'4". You know, my dad was a decorated athlete out of high school, 13 scholarships for football. He's a lead scorer on the basketball team. He's a pitcher on the baseball team. Like, he was fast and, like, just, guy had the gift, you mm-hmm. know? And so in our family, we're all like that. We're all athletes and we've always done well. But, you know, when I was a kid, I got diagnosed with leukemia. So I had cancer when I was a kid. And so this was, a real contrast, you know, for, like, what's going on in my family, because my dad was so dead set on being big and strong and powerful and, you know, good at, like, everything physical. I was, like, not that kid, you know, because I was stuck in a hospital, you know, for, like, 4 years with chemotherapy and, like, you know, whatever. And it just gave me a real late start. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a kid, I watched Conan the Destroyer.
Of course.
That was the second film. It was the sequel
with Will Chamberlain, right?
And yeah, right.
yeah,
and in that movie, if you look at that movie, that's the best shape I think Arnold Schwarzenegger's ever been in for a movie. Like, I'm pretty sure he was, like, Olympia, like, stage ready for that movie, because, like, now that I'm older, I look at all these different films and, like, man, he was jacked. And I remember when I was a kid, I said something to my dad, and I said, "Man, Dad," I said, that guy's big, you know. And here's my dad, 6'5", 300-pound dude that's always been larger in life to me as this, like, 6-year-old kid, 7-year-old kid, you know. And my dad says, no, that guy's not big, son. He's huge. He's, you know, 7-time, you know, Mr. Olympia or whatever. And I remember being like, in that moment, my dad telling me this guy was huge, I thought, well, then I want to look like this guy. And so, like, right then and there, I just thought to myself, like, that's what I want for myself. And, in my family, I was always, like, the smart one, you know, because I was not an athlete, you know, because I was just kind of came slower to me because I just didn't have the years of those motor skills.
You had a late start, like you said.
You know, and when I was 12 years old, I had a childhood mentor, a guy named Gus Hankey, who's very dear to me and still very close to me to this day, that took me to the gym. He was, like, 6-7 years older than me, and he took me to the gym, was showing me how to work out, and I would spot him and everything, and I deadlifted when I was 12, like a month or 2 weeks or 3 or 4 weeks before I turned 13, I deadlifted 300 pounds, and then I bench pressed 115 pounds. And I came running home and I asked my older brother, and I said, "Yeah, I did. These are my lifts. This is what I did. Can you do it?" And he was like, "Yeah, I can do about that." And I knew in that moment when he said it, he was lying. Okay. And so I made up my mind right then and there. I'm like, this is what I'm good at. So, like, I was hooked. It was it. It was the first thing. I was better than my older brother at something physical.
Oh, yeah. I remember that point, too.
You know, feeling?
Of course.
You know? And so in that moment, I was like, I'll never stop doing this. I could just work out every day and get better. I just remember thinking, like, all of a sudden, like, all this opportunity was, like, you know. And that's how I got started, man. You know?
That's a great story. And I didn't know that you're a cancer survivor. And like you said, that going from that kind of having a late start due to some serious illness like that just, I guess, probably motivates you to catch up.
Sure.
And now just keep pushing.
Sure.
You know, like, not slowing down.
Sure.
Which is, I think, you can obviously see in the results that you've gotten. We were talking about earlier about all your achievements in bodybuilding so far. One thing I wanted to get into was about really, I feel like there's a perception about, you know, bodybuilders, all, you know, all those guys are based on, you know, all they need is take supplements and they can get big. But I mean, I feel like that's such a misconception that they don't understand the hard work in both the gym and then outside the gym that it takes to be a professional bodybuilder.
Yeah, people, it's so hard to change your body. It's easy to get in shape. Like, I'll tell people, like, I don't care. Like, you don't even have to work out if you want to get in shape. Like, you can just eat right. You can just nail your diet, and you will get in shape. Your abs, you'll start seeing your abs. Mm-hmm. You'll start getting leaner. You have great health. Your skin will look good. You'll feel great. But if you want to change the shape of your body, you have to work out. And then that's where things get tricky. Because now, you know, your body's a survivor. You know, it just wants to survive and survive well. So if you want your body, you know, to change, then, you know, you train it a certain way and it responds by building more muscle, burning more fat, you know. And so now you got to think, okay, how can I maximize my muscle building potential and my fat burning, you know, at the same time I reach my goals? Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that it's tons of time in the gym. Now, initially, it's probably a good idea for people to spend a lot of time in the gym to learn their body, you get your motor skills developed so you can really get the focus of your movements and squeeze and feel all your muscles, you know, so you can direct tension. The other thing is you need to get with somebody that knows what they're doing, because you nowadays there's so much information out there. If you get the right person, you can literally, like, skip 10 years of trial and error and have somebody to show you what's going on.
Right.
Now, when you start doing it, you still have to have that factor of, you know, listening to your body. Does this work for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still have to have that in there. But, I mean, there's just so many things, like little things about my form that I used to do wrong for years that I didn't learn how to do right until 2, 3, 4 years ago. And I've been doing this, I've been working out since I was 12 years old, man. I'm 35. So, I mean, I've got like over 20 years of experience. And now it's like, I wish I knew everything then that I know now. And that's why I have like books on, you know, how to eat, you know, workouts, you know, I talk about training. I got all these different things because I'm trying to just add value to the world.
Right.
And it's not my way to be like, oh, this is some gimmick diet, some gimmick workout. It's like, this is what I'm doing for proven results. And I'm just sharing it with you. You know, it might not help every person that does it. But if it helps, you know, even one person, right on. But typically there's always, like, you know, your niche group that it works for.
Right. And so, I mean, you touched on in the beginning when you were getting into that explanation. It's like, if your goal is muscle, you know, muscle gain, obviously you've got the recipe for that. But if you're looking for general fitness, really nutrition is kind of paramount. And you've developed it, an approach to nutrition. You actually wrote about it in your book, The Supernatural Lifestyle. I want you to get into a little bit more detail of how you developed kind of your approach to nutrition.
Okay, so basically, you know, I was wrestling for the WWE and in 2009, and then I tore my ACL in my third battle royal match after a broke nose and a sprained ankle, just like all kind of stuff in 6 months, man. It's just brutal.
What was your name in WWE?
My name was Liff Sawyer.
Liff Sawyer. Liff now, Sawyer. Was a good guy or bad guy?
I was a good guy.
Good guy.
But, like, you know, my character was so new that, like, they gave me like half of that name, and like, it's just, you're learning how you're gonna come into your own, you know?
Right.
So it's such a new thing, you know, being in a battle royal. It wasn't even a one-on-one match. It was, you know, me and like 10 or 15 other dudes, and mm-hmm. trying to duke it out.
I didn't mean to get you off track, but I was interested in that.
It's all good. Everybody asks, you know, it's funny. I'm on some list for one of the top 10 like worst wrestling names ever. So that's cool.
Liff Sawyer. Okay. Yeah, that's something to hang your hat on, right?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm out there. Sweet. So, you know, that's cool. But you know, yeah. So there was that.
Yeah, after you hurt your knee, then you kind of realized that, you know,
What happened. Okay, so I hurt my knee, right? And then they started doing all these tests on me, and they said, "Oh my goodness," they said, you have a strain of hepatitis. That affects your liver, you know, and they said technically it's a blood disease, and then they said we're going to look into it a little more. So they looked into it a little more, and they found out that apparently the strain of hepatitis I have is curable with like 6 months of chemo at the time. Exactly. And I was like,
back into chemo again.
I was like, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that was the motivation for me to study nutrition, because I was trying to heal myself. Mm-hmm. So my whole life, I'd always studied nutrition and read books and tried to grow muscle. Now I'm just trying to get as healthy as possible so I can kick this thing out, because there's been cases where some people, because the liver, the way it works, it regenerates itself and it detoxifies. Sometimes it'll kick hepatitis right out of the body. It'll kick it right out. And so I thought, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And so, you know, being at Powerhouse Gym downtown Tampa, you know, I was working with all these top trainers and athletes, and I would ask them all these simple questions about nutrition. And I started finding out that, like, these guys didn't know what they were talking about. And I thought, wow, like, if you can't give me straightforward answers for simple questions I have, you know, mm-hmm. then, like, maybe I should just go get those answers, you know, and, like, and be the one that has them. And so the more I went into it, I started realizing, like, this is, like, not that hard. And so I figured out, you know, nutrition, I came up with three rules that covers everything. Like, number one, like, eat whole foods. That's what we're supposed to eat. Anything you'd hunt or gather in nature. So those are your food choices. Number two, don't mix your sugars and fats. Reason I say that is typically sugars and fats are not naturally occurring in the same substance in nature, okay? Mm-hmm. And the only time they are is in milk. Milk is for babies, and the way that we absorb nutrients in our infancy stage of life is very different than when we go to solid foods.
Right.
Once you go to solid foods, you're not getting sugars and fats unless you mix them on purpose. They're not in one substance. So I looked into that, and so that gives you, you know, how to group your foods together, you know? And then my last rule is nutrient timing. There's the best time to eat everything. You know, there's a reason why there's pre-workout supplements and there's post-workout supplements. You know what I mean? So there's, you know, there's the best time to have your carbs, the best time to have your fats, and the way to do it. So now that's the timing issue. So I basically give you your food choices, how to put them together, and when to eat them. And, like, nobody else is doing that. It's like people will tell me all the time, oh, so your program basically paleo? I'm like, yeah, paleo, like, supercharged. I said, because paleo ain't telling me when I should have beans or, you know, or rice or whatever. They're not telling me when to have it. I'll tell you exactly when to have it, you know? It's right. Like, if you don't have that aspect of your nutrition, it's no different than, like, eating healthy, you know? Like, right. Everybody will tell me, oh, it's healthy. Well, what does that mean? That's such a broad term. Like, why is it healthy? Oh, well, it's coconut oil in it. Well, so what? Like, it's still fat. Like, what good is that doing me right now? And so I always tell people, like, if you can't tell me exactly why every little thing is in your meal at that time, in your game plan for the day, you don't know what you're talking about. And, like, I'll tell anyone that. I'll tell you, I'm a self-taught nutritionist because I can answer those questions. Now, to me, it seems like common sense. Like, that's what we should all be after. Mm-hmm. Like, what should I eat? What should I eat it with? When should I eat it? You know, and then why? You know what I mean? People get too caught up on, well, this diet does that, and this diet does that. And if you look at diets, typically, diets, the whole point of a diet is they figured out one process in the body, so they restrict something that causes a certain process, okay? So it forces your body to do something. Eventually, you're going to hit a wall and crash, and exactly. You got to go back to figuring out how to eat. With me, I'm like, instead of forcing your body to get in shape by manipulating it or depleting it or restricting it, why don't you give your body everything it needs exactly when it needs it and allow your body to get in shape?
Right.
Like, why don't you take that approach? Like, why do we gotta, like, force it to starve and force it to burn fat when maybe, hey, how about I just, like, give you exactly what you need? Just like when your car runs out of gas, what do you put back in the gas tank?
Gas, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. When your car's out of oil, what do you put back in?
Yeah,
oil. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The body's the same way. And, like, I tell people, like, it's not rocket science. You guys make it way more difficult than it needs to be. And so, like, my book is real big on, like, the way I'm talking to you is, like, how I talk in my book, because I want people to understand that, like, this is it, folks. Like, this is it. Like, people say, oh, well, where does, like, pasta fit in there? Like, it doesn't, okay? Like, it doesn't fit in there. Like, I, you know, when I wrote my book, I set the bar as high as possible so you know this is the best way to eat. Now, anything away from that is going to be, you know, second best. But at least you're going to know. If I was to do it perfect, it was this. Mm-hmm. And so that was, like, the whole point of my book. And the reason I've had so much success, and now that I have it as a meal prep company and everything, it's great because, like, I coach people, like, you gotta understand too, like, man, when I wrote my book in 2011, the stuff I wrote about then, nobody accepted. Like, people were like, you're crazy. I'm like, you should have carbs pre and post workout. People are like, you're crazy. That's like, I don't like having any carbs. Like, you fasted this and that. And I'm like, and again, you're forcing your body to do something. When I would rather elevate my performance, you know, get the most I can out of a workout, eat what I need to eat when it's over so I recover from it, and let my metabolism do its thing and burn calories on the back end. So instead of like forcing them to do something now, how about we set the table so that your body's just elevated, metabolism elevated.
Right.
So, you know, some of the things that I was saying 5 years ago, people are doing now. And people are finally realizing, oh, wow, we're going to have carbs pre and post-workout is the best time. And I'm like, I was like talking about this years ago. And then there was like other things, you know, people would tell me, like when I first started studying nutrition, you know, we've all heard complex carb and simple carb.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that time, you know, they were trying to tell me that a complex carbohydrate includes spinach, kale, green beans, broccoli, asparagus, you know, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Sure. But then they're also throwing potatoes, rice, beans. It's like, wait a minute, how's a potato and spinach remotely close to the same thing? Like, how is that remotely, like, in my mind, like, you have a food here that's, like, full of energy, all right, with a little bit of carb and a little bit of nutrient. Then you have a food over here that's full of nutrients with very little energy and full of fiber. And it's like, how are these remotely the same? So I came up with a third category, and so I came up with, you know, you got your complex carbs, you got your simple carbs, and I said, you got your fibrous carbs. So complex carbs would be, obviously, like your rice, beans, potatoes, you know,
mm-hmm.
Your roots, whatever, you know, lentils. So then like your complex carbs, like, or your fibrous carbs would be like, you know, all your leafy greens that are full of fiber don't have a lot of energy in them. So check this out. So like, I was one that like, you know, changed that. Here we are 5-6 years later and people are talking about fibrous carbs and whatever. And it's like, but then yet they don't want to do everything that I'm talking about in my book, but you know what? In another 5 or 6 years, they will.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's just a matter of time. People are slow to change, you know, and it's crazy because when I came up with my book and the principles and everything I was doing, I want to be honest with you, Nick, I didn't try to say, oh, I'm going to do something so different and it's going to be so amazing. In my mind, I was just trying to do what I thought was best. But you got to think about it this way. I'm a self-taught nutritionist. So I didn't have any influence of what was standard procedure to learn nutrition. So that's like what happens is like, okay, if you go to China, they're going to say the way we do medicine is this way. And you come over here to the States and say, well, we do medicine like this.
Mm-hmm.
The end result is the same. But yet we have two completely different ways of getting there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so what I came up with is a completely different way of getting there because I didn't have the influence of somebody else trying to teach me this is how we do it. And so what's awesome about it is like everything is going my way now. Like everything is swinging my way. People are starting to realize, oh, diets aren't the best way. A lifestyle is.
Exactly. Yeah, that's that. And when you were kind of talking about that earlier, I was like, it sounds like a lifestyle opposed to a diet, which really is kind of has a periodic kind of a connotation to it. You know, people will say, oh, I'm going to do this diet, and it's really, you're going to do it for what, 3 months? I'm going to do a juice cleanse for 2 weeks. And you're like, why don't you just do something now and, you know, maintain it and stick to it for the rest of your life? Which it sounds like you're trying, that is the principle you're putting forth in your book.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's called the supernatural lifestyle. You know, and I tell people, I say, you know, what puts the super in the supernatural is this. You know, I read a book called Nutrient Timing. And one of the things they were talking about was manipulating your insulin spike for anabolic growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Insulin is actually the most anabolic hormone in the body. It's more anabolic than testosterone, growth hormone, anything, okay? The reason is because as soon as insulin comes into the game, it starts storing. You just start storing. Its job is to store everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know what puts the super in the supernatural is I basically laid out with my meal cadence a few things. Number one, because I don't mix my sugars and fats, I've been able to increase my body's insulin sensitivity. So this means when I do get an insulin spike, I can absorb more sugar than I would have without having increased insulin sensitivity. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So by having my meals where some have carbs and protein, some have fats and protein, this keeps your insulin sensitivity up because what we're doing is we're utilizing two different main metabolic pathways. Your body has two metabolic pathways, like two main ones that gets energy. There's a lot of ways the body gets energy, but there's two main ones. For fat is beta oxidation, for carbs is glycolysis, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the way to increase your body's oxidative properties with beta oxidation, so basically the way you get your body to turn fat into energy more effectively is by feeding it more fat by itself, okay? The way that you get your body to increase its metabolic pathway for glycolysis, which is carbohydrates, is to eat less carbs, okay? And so with my plan, that's exactly what happens because now we're eating less carbs throughout the day, so we might put more carbs in one meal,
So you absorb it more?
Exactly. So the idea is to absorb what your muscles absorb, what it needs to absorb. And so then we get, now we're getting twisted into this nutrient timing factor. We start to realize, oh, if I have carbs, I can have a lot of carbs right here. And this will increase my performance or help me recover, you know? And then when it comes to fats, I can eat a lot of fats later in the day. And this is great because the big problem with if you eat sugars and fats, I've argued with all kind of nutritionists, people with PhDs and whatever, and I'm still going to argue this to the day I die until it doesn't work. Because people want to know why I'm so lean, why I gain weight and grow and put weight on. It's because I don't mix my sugars and fats while I keep my calories up. And what happens is your body will always take the path of least resistance, all right? I'm a cancer survivor, so I know that my body just wants to survive. You can poison me with all the drugs in the world, and it's going to try to survive. You can give me shit to make my hair fall out, my gums bleed, my pee smell like a turd, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And my body's going to survive. It's going to do whatever it can to survive. And so knowing that, it's the same thing. Like when you go into the gym and you're training and you start to get tired, your form will start to fall, and you'll still be able to move the weight. Your form might not be good, but now you're still moving the weight. Why? Your body's taking the path of least resistance. That's what we do. So when you take your sugars and fats and you put them together, this is what happens. Your body can get energy from both of these, right? But they're not equal. So your body gets a ton of energy from sugars or from carbohydrates, and it gets moderate amounts of energy from fats, okay? If you eat them together, the digestive process starts working on the carbohydrates right when it hits your mouth, okay?
Right.
And then the other thing is it's water soluble, so your body starts digesting carbs right away. So your body has, and there's less steps involved before it becomes energy. So if you take like a simple sugar or something, before you know it, bang, it's already turned into energy, it's off and running. Well, with fats, fats are oil-based, they're the last to be digested in the stomach because they have to be covered by your liver bile before stomach acids can actually work on them. So they're the last to get digested, and then it takes all these steps before it can become energy. So what'll happen is, a lot of times, if your caloric needs are met with the carbohydrate first, by the time the fats come into the game, your body's like, no, we're good, let's just store you for later.
Okay.
And so that's where it's a problem. And people say, oh, no, the body will partition. I've heard people say, oh, the body will partition, it'll partition, you know. And I'll say, okay, in a major caloric deficit, yes, it will. It will definitely partition and take the energy however it comes. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But when your body's not there, you know, like your body's going to take the path of least resistance. It's just going to work on whatever's easiest first. And it just makes sense. And like, if you look at like, you know, somebody that doesn't mix their sugars and fats and see how lean they are and how easy it is to stay lean, opposed to somebody that does, it's like night and day, man.
Right. Yeah. What would be a type of food that has the combination you're talking about of sugar and fat?
Okay, there's a lot of them, but like some sneaky sugars and fats sources would be like a French fry.
Okay.
Because you got the potato, which is the sugar, right, and then you're frying it in grease, which is the fat. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't even care if you're frying it. I don't care if you're frying it in coconut oil, which is like supposed to be the healthiest thing ever, you know, or if you're frying it in olive oil. It doesn't matter. That fat is not a bad fat, but when you combine it with sugar, now your body's like, well, I'm going to store that and work on the sugar, you know. You know, like I tell people, like, you know, people say, well, what about a snack like peanut butter and apples? I'm like, well, apples are sugar and peanut butter is fat. Mm-hmm. Not a good idea. Those are two great foods on their own. But okay, don't put them together, you know? I'll tell people say, what about like oatmeal? And I'll put some cranberries in there. Then I like to put some walnuts in there. I'm like, don't put the nuts in there. Like, let your body work on what it's working on. Don't give it extra fat just to store that shit, because that's what will happen.
Right. It seems like you said, you're kind of inundating your body with two separate types of micronutrients, and when they can only work at one at a time, and the other one, the benefits of one kind of gets put off to the side, and then you don't get the benefits.
And so what will happen is that, here's the deal. So, again, like I talked about, if you constantly eat your sugars and fats together, your body's going to constantly go with sugars to get its energy. So what did I tell you? Eating less carbs, you know, enhances the metabolic performance of that main metabolic pathway. By eating fats by themselves and more of them, increases, you know, the oxidation effect of fats in that metabolic pathway. So if you're eating them together, your body's going to constantly work on the carbs and it ain't working with the fats.
Right.
And so now you're not, it's like having an arm you're not using.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stop doing that and come back to like a meal that has like fats for energy, it feels different when you eat it. Like, you will notice, like, I'm not satisfied right away. It takes, like, 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then before you know it, you're no longer hungry. It doesn't feel like a carb where you just tear into, like, a potato or something, and 5 minutes later, you're like, ah. You know, it's not like that. Like when you eat fats for energy, it comes slowly. Right. So in about 15 minutes, you'll just notice you're not hungry.
What's the type of meal that you were just describing that maybe the Supernatural Lifestyle Meal Prep Service offers?
Okay, so we have a color-coded system. So, you know, some of our meals have, you know, obviously carbohydrates and protein, or they have fats and protein. Or sometimes we just have, like, some meals that have really low carb, really low fat, and just high protein, you know. So, you know, we have a color-coded system. So all of our blue meals are our carb meals. So that would be, like, chicken, like chicken breast, you know, lean chicken breast. You know, we'll put broccoli in there and rice. Okay, so you're getting carbs and you're getting your protein.
Okay.
Then if you want to do like a fat meal, those are orange meals. A fat meal could be like our Angus beef burger with guacamole. It could be like our salmon dish with garlicky asparagus. Because there's fats and protein there. Mm-hmm. It could be our turkey meal with peanuts, which when I do my prep stuff, I like to use like 2 ounces of peanuts or 4 or 1 or whatever I'm doing with my meats, and I still have vegetables with it. So like, you know, I'll do for like a fat meal, you can have vegetables anytime because they're fibrous carbs.
Okay.
All right, that's anytime. Like you can eat them anytime, it's fine. I don't recommend that you have them post-workout because there's so much fiber, it'll slow down the absorption of those simple sugars that I want you to have post-workout. I talk about, you know, putting gas in the tank to run the car. When you run out of gas, put gas back in the tank. Well, the best way to do that is with a simple carb. Mm-hmm. So at that time, it's not a good time for fiber, you know, but for the most part, yeah, that's what our meals look like. You know, we got we have a turkey burger, we got a turkey lasagna, we got a turkey spaghetti, we got a...
And when you do spaghetti, I mean, is it...
It's zucchini.
Yeah, so like spaghetti squash or zucchini noodles,
sure,
yeah. as they like to call it.
So we do that, and you know, it's funny because I talk about in my book, I talk about cheese as being like... This is not this item that I think is some great item, and it's obviously not a whole food, okay? But it's one of those foods that it can be like an additive that can really change things. Mm-hmm. But what I like about it is it typically has fat, not sugar.
Yeah.
So it has one thing. If it had sugar and fat, I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't use it. Where could I put it? Because mm-hmm. it goes against everything I'm doing. But the fact that like, so I can have like a dish where it has eggs, it's got vegetables, like, you know, whole eggs and vegetables, and then you can put maybe a little bit of cheese on there if you got to have it, fine. If you're competing or something, no.
Right.
You don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you're just living a healthy lifestyle, that's fine because you're still using that metabolic pathway. And so, you know, whether it's fat from mayo, fat from cheese, or fat from, you know, nuts or avocado or something, it's still going to give you energy the same type of way.
That's awesome. And it's good because I still think, I don't know why I think the general, not consensus, but I feel like people still have the idea that eating fat makes you fat. They don't understand that it's a form of energy, that it's not this macronutrient that just turns you into a blob. You know, it's actually an important macronutrient. And the way you describe it, if you eat it correctly, it's almost kind of like makes you more satiated and gives you almost a better source of, or a different source of energy.
Well, I'm pretty sure Atkins proved that carbs make you fat. Yeah. Okay. So people, you know, like we at least learned that from the Atkins diet. Like if you eat lots of fat and you don't eat it with carbs, you're not going to get fat.
There you go.
Like you're not. Like mm-hmm. it's not the easiest way for your body to get energy. Your body has to work a little bit.
Right.
You know, carbs are the easiest way. Mm-hmm. You know, you take some simple carbs, some simple sugar, your body's like, boom, 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 4 steps, energy. That was easy. You know what I mean? And so if your body's not burning that for energy right away, it's going to store it as fat.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So yeah, I can't preach fats enough. And the other thing too is like people that don't eat fats in their diet enough, the right ones, typically have like problems with like their hormones,
right?
Because you know, cholesterol is building blocks for all your hormones and stuff, and so by keeping your fat up, you know, helps with all that. Mm-hmm. So like eating fat in your diet is critical for like, I always say this, like if your sex drive is a gauge, your sex drive is a gauge, you were built to procreate. So mm-hmm. if you don't have a sex drive, something's wrong. Like, straight up, something's wrong. You know, if your sex drive is off the chain, well, you know, there might be something wrong there, too. But I mean, like, at the end of the day, if you have no sex drive, that's, like, your first indication that something's off in your body.
Right.
Like, you should literally have a sex drive. That's, like, that's our first and foremost thing, like, as a species.
Yeah, your hormone, something's going on with your hormone balance in your body. And that's why I think we talked about it earlier. I imagine that since you're a big believer in incorporating more fats, and then it has that insulin... insulin
sensitivity,
right? Yes, it creates that, opposed to the insulin resistance that we're seeing with people who develop, you know, type 2 diabetes.
Sure.
Really, because like you said, they're down the carbs and forgetting the fats.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I'd like to talk about while we're on the idea of like dulling insulin sensitivity or glucose resistance, whatever you want to call it, you know, people talk about these artificial sweeteners and they think they're awesome. I'm going to tell you from experience right now with clients, people that I put on my program, okay, that do it to the T, they carry their weight all over. They don't carry their weight in one spot.
Right.
People that follow my program and are doing things that they're not telling me, like drinking Crystal Light that has artificial sweetener in it, mm-hmm. or they're doing something with aspartame, it's artificial sweetener, no sugar, and they're drinking on it all day, what I notice is they start carrying more weight in their midsection. Straight up. And so one of the things I've realized is it's dulling your insulin sensitivity. Why? No, it's not sugar, but your body's getting ready for sugar every time you drink something sweet. And so you're tricking your body. You never want to try to trick the body. You don't want to trick the body. You want to work with the body. Mm-hmm. You know, for years, people use diets to trick the body. I don't like it. I think you want to work with your body, you know? So, you know, if you're constantly drinking these sugars and your body's getting ready for an insulin spike and it's getting all jacked and like, okay, let's send insulin or let's get it ready, let's get it primed. Well, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You do it enough times, eventually your body's like, no response. And then your body's like, well, now what do we do? So here's what happens too. So if you eat sugars too much, whether it's these artificial sweeteners or it's just sugars anyways, your body will get used to anything you repeatedly do, okay? Like, it's always trying to find homeostasis, okay? And it's a survivor, so it's looking for that path of least resistance. So it's just like people that drink a lot of alcohol. You know, let's say it takes 6 at first, then it takes 8, then it takes 12, you know? Because your body gets used to it. Yeah. It starts acclimating, right?
Yeah.
It's the same way with sugar. So if you eat, like, people say, yeah, I'm going to go on this diet. I'm going to do chicken and rice and vegetables 6 times a day. You know, I'm supposed to get 3,000 calories because I weigh, you know, this much. And so I'm going to do 2,500 calories, and this is how I'm going to do it. Okay, you're going to lose weight, but what you're totally taking out of the situation is now you have, like, you've totally destroyed your insulin sensitivity, because the first time you had that rice in the day, you got an insulin spike. The second time, you get an insulin spike. The third time, you get a smaller insulin spike. The fourth time, not really getting one. Fifth time, ain't happening. So it's kind of like when you walk into a room, like I sleep with a fan on at night, and so you turn the fan on and you hear the fan. But then when you're in the room long enough, you kind of just tune it out.
You're used to it.
Right? Mm-hmm. Your body's the same way with like bringing sugars in. If you constantly do it, your body's like, whatever. So now here's the problem. So that's why we have type 2 diabetes, because now people are doing this. So what happens? So now this sugar is coming into the body and it's elevating your blood sugar to an unhealthy range. All right? But because insulin is not being triggered because it's used to it all the time, mm-hmm. it's not responding, how does your body bring your blood sugar down? Well, your body is amazing, so it always has some way of fixing itself. So what it'll do is it'll attach a glycerol molecule to the sugar that's in your blood, and now it changes the structure of it, and it becomes fat. So now your body's storing fat. While your insulin sensitivity is low, and your blood sugar is up, and you're storing fat, everything is wrong. Everything is wrong. It should all be the opposite, you know? And that's what we see a lot of times with people that don't understand that, like, don't do artificial sweeteners. I tell people, if you're craving some sugar, have some sugar. And then be down with it, and then let's get back on your program. Because we screwed up somewhere. If, like, I tell people all the time, like, you know, women are the worst about it, because women want to be smaller, guys want to be bigger. So women are the worst about trying to get them to eat. Because a lot of times I'll say, okay, you want to have your carbs before you work out. We're going to have you do like half a piece of fruit, maybe a little oatmeal, whatever in the shake. You can cook it, blend it, whatever you want to do. Eat that. An hour later, go to the gym, do your workout, go hard. When it's over, you can do your 15, 20 minutes of cardio if you want. That's fine. But then I want you to stop all that, and I want you to have your carbs right now. So you're going to do carbs again. So maybe the other half of the piece of fruit, you know what I mean? Some protein. I like it to be a simple carb, you know, right there. So what will happen is, Your body is going to absorb all that sugar because it just ran out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't do that, you just take a protein shake and then you go about your day. 6 hours later, 7, 8 for sure, you're going to have like uncontrollable cravings.
Right.
Because now your body's been making do all day, and it's going to come finally get to a point like, whoa, wait a minute, we didn't get what we needed. And then, like, all of a sudden, you're just, like, tearing through the cabinets, eating all the chocolate or whatever you got in there, honey, syrup, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And then you fail, and people will come to me, like, I say, why was I so hungry? What did it? I'm like, did you eat your crucial post meal, or did you eat your post-workout shake? Yeah. Did you eat it? Well, I didn't have my fruit. Well, I'm like, why did you not have your fruit? Well, I just thought I just worked out so hard and I didn't want to put all that sugar. I'm like, oh, so now you're the professional. So now you know what you're doing. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is where I need you to listen to me, okay? So like, this is, there's a reason why I tell you to do this. I'm not just like hoping it's gonna work. You know?
I can imagine it's frustrating I think it's because we've been ingrained with so many wrong facts about nutrition, about incorrect facts. It's from the FDA or from the USDA. We've had a wrong perception about nutrition. And like you kind of experienced when you said you were with trainers that didn't even have any real basic knowledge about nutrition. I mean, I hear people talk about general physicians that can't give them good nutrition recommendations.
Oh, well, you know what? They can't. And I don't hold them. I don't fault them for it, because they only get like a semester of nutrition in their whole training. The rest is just drugs.
Right.
You know, because I have some friends of mine that are physicians, and you know, they've educated themselves about nutrition, and then we'll talk and go back and forth, and they always end up coming back going like, okay, so you do it like this, and you want me to do what? And then I tell them, you know, and they're like, okay. I'm like, does that make sense? Like, it does make sense. Okay. You know what I mean? Cause, you know, doctors are great because you can teach them anything. They can learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like a doctor, they can learn anything. It's great. You know, but the problem is they're not always out-of-the-box thinkers. They need to be taught, you know, whatever it is they're learning. So it's tough to find that doctor that has an open mind, you know what I mean? That's like, oh, okay, maybe there's some benefit, obviously, to nutrition. What do you know that I don't, you know? Because, right. I mean, doctors are basically our upper echelon of, you know, I guess they're almost like royalty, you know, in our society,
mm-hmm.
I mean, which is great because they're super educated and there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I don't fault them for not knowing nutrition, but I do fault the system, you know, for not teaching nutrition to anybody. They don't teach nutrition in school.
Right.
They don't
teach. I agree.
There's two things they don't teach you in school that, in my opinion, are the most important: nutrition and finances.
That's what I was about to say. I maybe knew how to balance a checkbook one class, but other than that, that was about the extent of my finances. You know, unless you were going to take one in college.
It's almost up to you. You really have to take initiative to make it happen. Otherwise.
And another great source for people, if they want to learn more about nutrition, is your book. Where can they find The Supernatural Lifestyle?
The easiest way to find it is just go on Amazon, Supernatural Lifestyle, you know, just, you know, search it there, or Barnes & Noble online, you can get there too. Or you can go to my website, eatlikeaaron.com, or thesupernaturallifestyle.com, or tallguytraining.com, which is my site specifically for tall people. But there's like many different ways.
Okay. And then also for the meal prep company, is that local to Tampa right now?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any?
We can get you to St. Pete, Clearwater, Brandon, you know, surrounding areas, maybe Plant City. Yeah. But that's about as far as we go.
Okay. Well, that's great. So obviously, if you're outside the Tampa area, get Aaron's book.
Yes.
And if you want to try the food, you know, and you're in the Tampa area, eat like Aaron. That's the way to do it. Aaron, I really appreciate you joining me today. And hopefully, maybe when you, if you add some new stuff to the menu, you'll come on in the future and talk
about it. Sure, I'd love to.
All right, thanks again.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully, you guys enjoyed that interview with Aaron Reed. Obviously, you guys can tell he's full of knowledge and super passionate about nutrition. I can't wait to get his book, The Supernatural Lifestyle. I really like his approach to nutrition. It's simple, and it's really, from all the health and fitness professionals I've spoken to already, it seems that there's a lot of similarities. So that's how I know it's really, he's done the research. And obviously, with the health obstacles he's had in his life, he's really had to make sure his approach to nutrition is kind of spot on.
Yes, and I mean, his story is incredibly inspiring, not just from why he had to get into nutrition, but all of the things that he's had to overcome in his life. I mean, he's had cancer as a child. Becoming a cancer survivor is something I don't even want to think about. That's amazing. But then also to overcome other health and illnesses in your life that, you know, traditional medicine prescribe very, very drastic treatments for. And he chose a more natural approach and just trying to take ownership of his nutrition. So that is amazing to me. I mean, he sounds like such an interesting guy.
Yeah, it was a great interview, and I'm can't wait to get his book. Go to Amazon, look for The Supernatural Lifestyle. I'm going to be buying it soon. And also, the Eat Like Aaron meal prep service.
Yeah, can we try that?
Yeah, I mean, it's only available, like you said in the interview, to the people in Tampa Bay, but that means we're the fortunate few.
Hey.
So there's a couple meals that he outlined in there that sounded super tempting, like I think it was grass-fed beef and guacamole, or it's not something that's, super complicated, but it's just like, that's what you really need. You need consistency when you're in nutrition, you know, and follow a good plan, a simple plan like he's outlined in his book and during the interview like you heard. I think that's really the key for health and nutrition, being consistent. So make sure you guys check out all the links for Aaron. They'll be up at the show notes at elementaltampa.com. And we'll also be interviewing several other fitness and health professionals this year. So if you guys have any suggestions on who we should reach out to, or maybe you can reach out to them and just drop our name to them.
Yeah, and let us know what you're most interested in hearing about from what's going to inspire and motivate you. Hopefully you made some resolutions and promises to yourself, some goals for 2017. We're here to help you be inspired and to stay inspired throughout the year. So let us know how we can help and what you want to hear.
All right. I think that's all we got for room for this week. You got anything else?
Nothing.
All right. This has been another edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. And we'll check you next time.
Bye.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ET Tampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks.
Never shut it off.
Always record.
Just always keep always it on. Always record. You never know what's going to come out of our mouths.
Always record. What's up?